Moreover, they also learned an important lesson. The Confederation government had been utterly useless almost in supporting its army. In fact, it largely starved the army. And in fact, it was unable to fulfill most of its treaty obligations. It was simply too weak. And almost everyone in the military came to realize that if we ever had to fight a war again, we would need a much more powerful and centralized government. And Hamilton was one of the first to see this. He'd been active in the attempted reforms of the early 1780s by Robert Morris to add an impost or tax to the powers of the Confederation government. And even seems to have been a small sort of participant in the famous Newburgh conspiracy to threaten a coup d'etat if there was not a strengthening of the central government. Hamilton fundamentally feared the powers of the states. He thought that first, they were a bad influence on both the credit and economy, each having different currency regulations, each having different banking rules, each having potentially different tariffs. But he also feared sectional warfare. He was afraid that if we did not eliminate the states as locuses of identity and patriotism, that eventually North and South would come to blows. Now, in fact, he accepted the states in the federal government as a second best to a fully national system. What Hamilton would have liked would have been to have eliminated the states entirely and just created administrative districts. And this is important because for Hamilton, the whole point of creating the Constitution was to curb the power of the states. By contrast, Jefferson is the champion of weak government and states' rights. In fact, he's one of the first champions of the Bill of Rights, something that Hamilton vociferously opposed. As he writes to Madison in 1787, "I will now add what I do not like about the Constitution that Madison and Hamilton are working on. First, the omission of a Bill of Rights providing clearly and without the aid of sophisms for freedom of religion, freedom of the press, protection against standing armies, restriction against monopolies, the eternal and unremitting force of the habeas corpus laws, and trials by jury in all matters of fact. I own I am not a friend to very energetic government. It is always oppressive." This is a stark contrast. For Jefferson, the key to keeping the American government strong and prosperous is an agrarian political economy. "I think our governments will remain virtuous for many centuries, as long as they are chiefly agricultural. And this will be as long as there shall be vacant lands in any part of America." So this means that for him, the national government must look westward. Hamilton, by contrast, wants a industrial policy, which means keeping the populations in the East and inhibiting westward migration. Jefferson also sees the Constitution not as a national organization, but as a compact among the states. And this is a principle that he'll argue for throughout his career. As late as 1825, he complains that the federal government claims, for example, and have commenced, the exercise of a right to construct roads, open canals, and effect other internal improvements within the territories and jurisdictions exclusively belonging to the several states, which this assembly, and this was the protest of the Commonwealth of Virginia, which this assembly does declare has not been given to that branch by the constitutional compact, but remains to each state among its domestic and unalienated powers. Well, there's also a difference over the way they read the Constitution. Jefferson believes in strict construction. You can only do what the Constitution explicitly allows you to do. And the key for him here is that 10th Amendment, which is central to his opinion on the constitutionality of a national bank, one of Hamilton's projects, which he argues is unconstitutional. "I consider the foundation of the Constitution as laid on this ground, that, quote, all powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states or to the people." To take a single step beyond the boundaries thus specially drawn around the powers of Congress is to take possession of a boundless field of power, no longer susceptible of any definition. Hamilton, by contrast, believes in the doctrine of implied powers based on Article 1, Section 8, which states the Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts, and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. And that general welfare clause is critical to Hamilton, because when he adds to it the last paragraph of Section 8, which states, to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by the Constitution and the government,